I got dogs that won't listen, my wife arguing with me, and just a month ago, I was the leader of a billion-dollar organization.
Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week, they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff, too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Well, once again, boys, everyone, listeners from around the world, okay, it's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with Rusty Cortinel and another episode of Suspendables. We do it each and every week, of course, and this week is a big week. It's a huge week. This may be the biggest star we've ever had on the show. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what I like. I've exchanged a few texts with this guy, and I immediately fell in love with him because he started calling me Jimmy. Okay, right away. You know, when you get the Jimmy, that means the guy likes you. And any chance that I have, because, you know, this show goes for 45 minutes or an hour, and I get absolutely beaten like a pulp by Russ, okay? That's all he does is beat me. So now we've got someone who's way more important than Rusty, okay, who's on the show. Long time NFL coach in a very, very strong career, Super Bowl champion. He was trying to beat Bill Belichick's record for coaching tenure, except Bill Belichick now has coached for 70 years, okay, for the New England Patriots. We are very pleased, and thank you very much. Sean Payton is our guest. Shawnee, boy, how are you?
Hey, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys having me on, really. And Jimmy, I feel like I've known you like I know Russ. I get what you're talking about, but... You know, listen, it's exciting. We are all over the world, too. I'm down in Florida, and God only knows where you guys are.
I was just in Florida. I went to go for 3 days. I stayed 3 weeks because I don't want to come back to where I am, to Alberta. It's no good here, Sean.
Sean, did you join Jordan's course down in Florida?
Oh, stop.
2 years ago, there was a Super Bowl in Miami, not last year, but the year before. And, yeah, so look, we did the tour, and you know, my wife and I were looking at it, and man, everything seemed great. And we were there for about an hour on this golf cart, and then she finally turned to me and she said, "Are they recruiting you, or are they, or are they interviewing you?" And it was a good question. Right at that moment, I thought, I don't know that we have a table yet, and yeah. So. I turned and I looked at Ken, who runs the course. I said, "Ken, are we in if we want to come?" He said, "Yeah, we're just showing you everything." I said, "All right." I didn't know who was recruiting who here.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, don't invite Jimmy because Jimmy's nickname is TMZ, and you know you have a no camera, no picture rule there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, last week, Gretz invited him over, one of his closest friends.
Yeah.
And ours from our lives, Sean, through Gaza, mine through hockey.
Jimmy, did you have an altercation there?
Yeah. Well,
he fucked up.
An altercation would have been a better idea than what I did. I will pick it up from here, okay? Because Russ will just drill me on this thing. So Gretz invites me over to Jupiter. You got to come and play this course, Grove 23, Michael Jordan's course. It's just, you know, it's just unfolding here at my feet. I'm really lucky, Sean, or was. And so there's a great, you know, the first 50 guys paid $250,000. The next 50 are going to pay $4.25 million. The story just, you know, go next 50 are going to pay $1 million. It's going to be the most exclusive golf course between here and Mars. Okay. This thing, Gretz says, yeah, we're doing it. You're going to stay 2 days. One rule, no cameras. That's pretty straightforward, Sean. Okay? That's pretty straightforward. Somehow I lost my freaking mind when he said, no, I just met, like, if I ran into you, Sean, and they said, no cameras, I'm not going to put my arm around you, whip out my phone. Okay. I get that. Don't do any of that. For some reason, I thought it was okay to take a picture.
A video
10 feet away from the clubhouse. Ah, that's fine. I thought I'd do that. And I took a video of Jordan hitting a golf ball.
And then I threw it up on my social media, Sean, which I thought would, yeah, look at Sean. See, he is my friend. At least I'm getting support.
Here's the thing. And Jimmy, I appreciate you, number one, being honest with me, because yeah. you were Wayne's guest. You weren't mine.
Yeah.
And so but what you don't know is on Wayne's like profile, there's a couple marks right now. So I've got a clean one. And so, look, I'm just going to refer to you as Jim from now on if we can. It went from Jimmy to Jim real quick.
Yeah, did it ever, man. Did it ever. TMZ. Yeah, so that's I just got a regret. He left me reeling in the wind until this morning. I was, you know, he's frothy. I'm so sorry, dude. My heart. I can't fucking sleep. And he finally got back to me and said, I thought I'd let you melt for a little while. He says, it's all good, buddy. It's all good. I didn't realize how funny you are, Sean. We were talking off air and you were in your car and trying to get settled in your house. Cause I got to tell our listeners this line. And you said, here I go. And when you got in there, the dog was barking. Your wife was arguing with you. Something else was going on. And you said, this is my life now. And 3 weeks ago, I was part of $1 billion football team.
I was in charge of.
Exactly. Running a billion dollar team. What a career you had. Before we get to that, I am from Ottawa. I went to high school and university in Ottawa. And when Russ was telling me, of course, I know you. I'm a Saints fan. I originally became a Saints fan when a guy I knew from Saskatchewan, Reuben Mays, played for New Orleans from North Battleford, Saskatchewan.
Yep.
And he was kind of the first Canadian after Theismann that I knew who came into the league. So I'm not bullshitting you when I say I was a fan.
Yeah.
But you, when I'm reading your stats and your career, you ended up in Ottawa as a quarterback. What the freak? What's up with that?
Yeah. So it was 1987. I was playing. 87 was the very first year that the U.S. had that arena football. And I was just out of college playing for the Chicago, I think the Bruisers. And, you know, we played in the hockey rinks, the arena football. So a lot of times, you know, the field setup wasn't too different. You were obviously playing on turf instead of ice, but you had the boards and everything else. But no, after our fourth game, I was the first player ever traded from the arena football league. So obviously this is all a buildup to the point where somebody wise tells me, get onto your career path in life. You're going to be a coach. But anyway, I'm still wanting to play. I got traded to the CFL, and we came off the flight. You can't make this up. We flew into Pittsburgh. We were playing at the Igloo. But we landed. We had a meeting at the Holiday Inn we were staying at. And they did a trade over the phone with the Rough Riders. I was a backup that night. We flew back home with the WWE wrestlers that were on our plane together. I packed up out of the hotel in Chicago. It was July 3rd. And then July 4th, flew to Canada, Toronto first. I remember it was the 4th of July. It was the hottest summer, I want to say, Canada had in years. If you looked at 87, landed in Toronto, connected to Ottawa. And I was there probably a month and a half. This is how naive I was. I'm going to keep going with this story real quick. So Joe Pau-Pau, who had a fantastic career. Yeah. I think he's played for every team up there.
Yeah, he did. And coached.
Then we had Todd Dillon was an American quarterback. And then Wickersham was the guy that somebody got hurt. So I was up there as a backup. And there was a game where the quarterbacks didn't play too well. We lost. I forget who. And man, that next morning, my hotel light, I was staying at a hotel, was blinking, and I pick it up, and it was the GM left me a message. He wants to see me. And I thought, son of a gun, I'm going to start next week.
Sure.
Honestly, gosh. And was it Lansdowne Park or Lansdowne Stadium?
Lansdowne Park.
Yeah.
So, you know, got the ride over to Lansdowne Park, got there, went into the facility, and my locker had already been packed. And I got up there. I got up there to see him, and he cut me. And I'm trying to think. There were two, Wayne Giordano and Fred Glick. One was the GM, one was the head coach.
Sure, sure.
And I packed up, went back to the States, and then still bounced around for another year playing over in Europe, and then finally got into coaching. So I was a Rough Rider, and honestly, I had no recollection. You just had to believe me prior to meeting Rust. And then Rusty found a picture that my kids never saw. No one's ever seen this picture. It's really the only proof that I was with the Ottawa Rough Riders.
Yeah.
And and so I got that picture last month and got a kick out of it.
So you never threw a pass? Like, if I'm listening to the story right, you were there for 48 hours.
I threw a ton of practice passes.
Yeah.
So picture this. You guys are hockey guys. I was on the fourth line. I was the fourth player on the fourth line.
a lot of
left, right out.
Yeah. You know, we often have American guests on, you know, from other sports, and they're polite, and they'll try and sort of fake their way through hockey knowledge. Okay. With us, right. They think it's Canada. I got to know hockey knowledge. I want you to give your take because we got a lot of listeners, a lot of guys our age who love the old era of hockey. Tell me about your days in Philly.
To this day, we talk a lot about the significance of an NHL franchise winning a cup, maybe in a not a place where there's been great hockey tradition. Like, it flips it immediately in a city. Like, we've seen that happen in Tampa now. On and on and on, places maybe that haven't had any history that immediately. And I was a part of that in Philadelphia. I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old when the Flyers won back-to-back Stanley Cups. And I can remember everything about that team. I gave you the Leach Clark Barber line, the LCB line. Perrant was the goaltender. Freddie Shiro, the late Freddie Shiro, was the head coach. You had the Watson brothers. You had Ed Van Impe. You had freaking Rick McLeish was my guy, number 19, with the wrist shot. Reggie Leach had the slap shot. Don Selesky, Dave Schultz, Ed Van Impe. I never knew it, and it's changed now, but back then the ring sizes varied. You might build your team around the type of rink you were playing in, and I know the Spectrum back then was a smaller, dump and forecheck type team, but that was, you know, I know they were the Broad Street Bullies, but that was bully hockey that you still can kind of see occasionally. But the rink sizes varied greatly. I knew when we went to certain places, it wasn't good, you know, when it was a big rink.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can recall, look, everything about that as a kid. Then we started playing street hockey, and then we got the Milex sticks, you know, and the orange ball. And there. And the only reason I'm right-handed in everything I do in life, except when I play hockey, and I'm sure because the first stick I ever had was bent lefted, you know, that was the only. And got into playing street hockey, then played some ice hockey up until high school. And as late as just a year ago, bought some Bowers and went skating up at Gosser. And these guys tried to prevent me from going out there and killing myself, but I did it anyway.
So where, you talk about being that young, 7, 8 years old, and it looked like your first love was hockey.
Yeah, it was a big deal. We got off school when they won it the second year.
Yeah.
We didn't have classes. You know, Kate Smith was singing, so that was a tough team to beat when she was singing, right? And back then it was on UHF, right? And so my dad, you know, you had 3, 5, and 7. That was CBS, NBC, and ABC, but you went to UHF and you got the antennas going. And so then you heard Gene Hart and Don Earl. And man, the whole city followed that team.
Unreal.
And it really you know, when you're that young, you kind of root and get excited for the teams your father gets excited for. But we would sit around those TV screens in the playoffs and watch them. We were skating. We were skating on a pond when the Russians walked off the ice against the Flyers in that, like, they were playing one of those, like, exhibition matches. Right.
Yeah.
And I think they made them come back on to get paid, or they told them.
They weren't going to feed them.
Yeah, but I don't recall if it was Clark or somebody hit one of the Russians into the boards, and the coach kind of just called it up. And, you know, that was during the Cold War. And so that was in the 70s. And I can recall us on the ice literally listening to that and, like, throwing our gloves in the air like the Flyers were too tough for the Soviets. And that was a big deal.
Yeah. Where did you Sean Payton, I would have, this is fantastic, man. All the shit you know about hockey, it's more, and I'm embarrassed because you know more than I do. And I'm a Canadian about that history. And then, of course, we look at you, and you had this very, really low key NFL career. No, you didn't accomplish very much. You know, it's like a throw in. Good God, you're a career Hall of Famer, iconic coach. When did all the football shit start then? When did that come into your life?
So I played junior football in Philly. We moved to Chicago right after seventh grade, and my dad transferred there. And so, you know, all my high school years were there, eighth grade, high school. I kind of developed late. You know, I was on the football team. I stopped playing hockey after the seventh, or I played in eighth grade, and then that was it, went into high school. And kind of was a backup, early in high school, and then had a really good senior year, got recruited, and then stayed in Illinois. Went to school at Eastern Illinois. Had a really good college career. And then, you know, when I was done with the CFL and the Europe and, I remember my mom always saying, you know, your friends are all getting married. They have health insurance. You have neither. You know? That's great. It was like, what's your plan? And, I drove a Chevy Cavalier, the summer of 1988 to San Diego State from Chicago, broke down in Denver and began coaching. I was a GA there for 2 years at San Diego State, you know, getting coffee and breaking down tape, doing anything, you know, you could to make an impression. And then it went to Indiana State full time. That's when I first, had a real job then, you know, I was 2 years there, went back to San Diego State. Then Miami of Ohio for 2 years, University of Illinois for one season. And then it's funny, I always wanted to be a coach in the Big Ten, you know, in the Midwest. And you never really thought much about the NFL, really thought more about the college game. And in 1997, I got hired by the Philadelphia Eagles.
Wow.
To be their quarterback coach. And it was, you know, our league, just like any sports league or smaller industries, is, you know, most of the time, the advice I'd always give is just focus, you know, where your feet are on the ground. Everything else will handle itself. But I didn't know anyone at that time in Philly, but there were a few people at Illinois that had contacts with the Eagles, and that ended up being, you know, my first break. And then from Philly, I went to the Giants for 4 years as the offensive coordinator. We went to a Super Bowl. That's probably when I realized that, you know, this is going to be, you know, probably I'm going to have a chance maybe to be a head coach. And then my last 3 years before coming to the Saints were in Dallas with the Cowboys and Bill Parcells. And then 2006, I got hired to be a head coach. So yeah, the hockey route was fun. And, but you know, I looked at the rosters, they're kind of like the CFL rosters with Canadians, you know?
I already love your mother. All your buddies have health insurance and they're married and you got neither. You know, Rusty's, I keep talking here, Rusty, you can jump in at any time, but this is fantastic. You know, Rusty has given everybody an idea, him as a successful NHLer, how difficult and how tough it is to make the NHL. you know, the numbers are staggering, Sean, that, you know, there's 7 jillion kids who all believe they should. The chances of that is about 1%. And, you know, there's only 750 guys. To make it where you did in the NFL, you know, or the other big sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football, we've talked about hockey. What are the odds, Sean, if a parent came up to you and said, "Hey, will you look at my kid, man? I think he's ready for the fucking NFL." You know, excuse my language. What's your take?
Yeah, listen, there's a couple thoughts on it. And I've had a number of these discussions. You know, I think this strongly. I love it when kids want to play multiple sports. I reckon there's a few sports that's hard to do, you know, when you watch the young gymnasts and there's some other sports maybe, and maybe a little bit harder in Canada with the weather and the climate. But I would say this, you know, chasing those dreams is healthy because look, I wanted to play as long as I could and then graduate and get an education. But after that, it was like, all right, well, if everyone's told me I can't play anymore, then what's the next thing I can do without having to leave this building? And so, look, I got into coaching, but man, my assistant in New Orleans that has been with me, the last 5 or 6 years, you know, he had no football background, graduated from LSU. He started in our equipment room. Then he went up to video, got promoted. Then he became, you know, one of my assistants and analysts. And so I just think the passion's fantastic. And I don't think we ever want to pour water on the passion because it can lead to so many other things. And I think that, but it also, it teaches you, you know, I was at that hockey game not too long ago in Nashville, the Winter Classic. And I met one of the Nashville players, and I looked at Kelly Chase and I said, did he just have freaking either bad Botox to his lip or he got a puck to his lip? But there's some grit and some toughness in chasing and not always maybe getting what you're looking to get. But I think if you approach it the right way, and what I see sometimes and I cringe is when I see it's more important to the parent.
Yeah.
Than it is to the kid at a young age. And so, you know, I coached in 2012, I was suspended for a year from the NFL and I coached my son's 6th grade football team. And that was a unique experience. And it started with, hey, we got to have a mission statement. Like, in other words, seriously, we're talking to, and as a parent coach team at the time, 2 years from there, they were going to be under the high school umbrella. And our mission statement was that every one of these kids played again the following year. And so we want to win. We're going to play him in 2 spots, you know. So, you know, we had him on an offensive position. We had him in a defensive position. Learning, you know, when you're coaching kids that are 11, 12, and 13, the size, I mean, kids mature differently. Yeah. And so, you know, trying to find ways to get them on the same shift or in any type of drill, matching up like size kids and not taking the stinger out of it, you know, if you can. So, the amount of heartache and tears along the journey, I think is just healthy. And is part of it, but yeah, I mean, the odds are never good when you, like we can point to some career paths that the odds are really good. And yet, that there's so many different things when you look at, like, just take an analyst right now, you know, the amount of people covering the hockey game, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm watching Cooper's Tampa Bay team and I didn't know they're on every night, but you just got to get past the adult channels and get to the 600s. And
they're way up there. Yeah. You got to go deep. Yeah.
But you can find them every night. I watched them play the Blackhawks last night.
Yeah.
And so, well, there's different analysts covering the game. And so there's so many different career choices. If your passion is hockey, yeah. You know, in other words, if you ever make it to the ice, you know, and I just think that, I think, man, having one of those jobs, you're really not counting the days you're at work and you don't realize you're necessarily working is pretty cool.
Right.
How about that coaching change for your kids' football team? Okay, we're having a parents meeting and we're gassing one of the dads or moms and we got this guy coming in, Coach Sean Payton.
So,
but I just want everybody to know, like, who's listening, is Sean and I met 2 years ago, two summers ago at Gozer. And I don't know if it took a half an hour or 15 minutes, but we became very good friends right off the hop. We're similar age. And
why, Sean? Why did you do that?
But I have to tell you guys, almost every morning we would meet for breakfast. And there's this group of us. It was Gretz. It was Kelly Chase, Ray Whitney, Michael Whalen, who's a really good friend of Sean's, Pat the Bat Burrell.
Holly, was he there?
Brendan Morrow. Nah, Holly came in just for a couple of weeks. He's right. No longer a member there. So Brendan Morrow, and then a couple other guys, friends that are athletes. But that was we had this corner table, and we just couldn't wait to get there for breakfast because it was story time. You know, everybody's telling stories. And so anyways, I just wanted people to give some people a little bit of reference to Sean and I, our friendship.
Yeah. Your name comes up all the time about who people want to be like. How did all that go for you, Sean? Did you learn from someone, or did you design your own philosophy?
I think, look, sometimes we're a byproduct of bloodlines that maybe sometimes we don't choose them. You know, like my first job in the NFL was with the Eagles, and I didn't know John Gruden or Ray Rhodes and that staff, but on that staff was, you know, David Shaw, John Harbaugh, there were five different head coaches just on that staff, and we were all young and dumb. We didn't know it at the time. I was influenced greatly by my high school coach, you know, that he was like a father figure to me in a lot of ways. And then, you know, late in my career, before becoming a head coach, I took a job in Dallas with Bill Parcells. And for me, that was a little bit like law school, in that there was so much more than just the X's and O's of the game. It was dealing with people the right way. It was also understanding what you were looking for from a personnel standpoint. Bill was really good with personnel scouting. And look, I have these conversations with these guys all the time because I know in hockey, there's the scouting department, right? They're going to draft the players, and then the coaches, you know, go work them, coach them. And that's all, it's perfect. And yet, man, those organizations that are a little closer relative to the communication, number one, and number two, that, you know, they check the egos a little bit at the door, because one of the challenges in any industry where there's a lot of money is self-preservation. And when people start trying to just worry about extending their career, it kind of goes counterproductive to really winning. And so I would say, Jimmy, that the number one thing is, you know, sometimes you're fortunate to who you're with because you didn't really choose it, but you ended up there. And then sometimes, you know, I always would talk to a young coach, man, I would choose program over pay or title. You know, when a young coach is talking about making a move, you know, teams want to hire people that have been winning. And that's just the way society is, right? You know, and so find if you can a position where you're in, you have a chance to win, and you know, you'd be surprised, you know, how nice your resume begins to shape up, because you're learning, you're not just making money and making a living, but you're also learning how to do this and extend your career and how to do it well, and then well enough to where, man, pretty soon all those other dreams you have take care of themselves.
Right. Winning and losing follow you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Aaron Rodgers is bugging me a little bit here. Okay, Sean, he's bugging me a little bit. Okay, there's a story today. It's like, I don't know if he's holding out for money or what, because he's going to get 40 or 50 million or something, Sean. And so when I'm writing this shit down, man. This is so good what you're telling me. Better program than a career or money, I think you said, or something like that. Is sports now so big, Sean, that it's kind of losing sight of normally how, you know, sports has always been about galvanizing the community and galvanizing the country and bringing people together. Is it getting just such a big industry, Sean, that maybe you don't like it as much as when you first started?
I don't think it's tilted that way. It certainly has changed a lot. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The key ingredients, will never change relative to winning. And I love visiting with John about this or other coaches in our league or other sports. Those ingredients relative to your makeup, you've got to have talent, obviously. You've got to have guys that are on the same page. And generally speaking, you've got to have some unselfishness to you. Mm-hmm. I liked the coolest thing I've heard. Popovich was asked the question, like, what are you looking for in a player or employee? And he said, well, he said, first off, a good sense of humor will help. And he said, and the reason he said that, he goes, generally speaking, I want players and coaches that can laugh at themselves because they probably can take criticism and then improve. Right. But we run into problems, don't we? When you ever talk to someone that they can't laugh at themselves, or sometimes they just can't laugh, you know, it's like
they're stuck. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it's hard to do this as it is. It's super competitive. Obviously there's more and more, you know, the microphone, is not only between the periods now, shoot, they're going to interview you like while there's a stoppage in play.
Right.
Yeah. It's unreal.
And so the same thing with us, they want more and more and coming off the field, coming on the field. And you know what? It's still the greatest train ride and we're better for having been on it than never ridden at all, but it stops for all of us. But I do think that it's just, it's changed in a lot of positive ways because it's been more inclusive. There are more people that have careers around that sport that never had in the, and so I'm following. I didn't see the news on Aaron today. I think by tomorrow he'll have a decision, but I kind of like what Barkley said. You know, I think Charles said it the other day. He's kind of like that pretty girl in high school that needs to be told how pretty she is every day.
We got each other on this, Sean.
When I say this now, he's really good.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Awesome. Our tolerance for him would not be this high if he wasn't really, really good.
Yeah, that's exactly. True. Yeah. Well, Tom Brady's starting to set the bar, right? Aaron Rodgers, Roger Federer, all these other guys. That, you know, Phil Mickelson won the PGA last year. So the old guys live on. I got to ask you, Sean, because the CFL, Canadian Football League, has struggled more often than not. Recently it's been a tough sell in Canada over the last little while, economically. It's a fantastic, speaking of Galvanizer, the Grey Cup brings a lot of people together. I've entertained it. Those things are fantastic. But there's always this debate, Sean, about it's time maybe for the CFL to go to American football rules. Let's get the same field. Let's get four downs as opposed to three, of course. And let's get this thing maybe as a feeder league to the NFL. What do you say about the CFL, Sean?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, whether it's designed to be or not, it is somewhat of a feeder league because we're in the business of studying football, like wherever it's played. And so the fact that it's played up there and there's an additional players can be moving at the snap. There's a few nuances. I get all that. Mm-hmm. I like that thought relative to making it a little bit closer to the game that so many people watch. Because look, when we went back 30 years, there were a lot of people that didn't get to see NFL games, but would watch a CFL game. And so like the same way in hockey, at some point someone said the rinks are going to be the same size. We're not going to have various, it's not going to be like baseball. So
good point.
What's interesting is you bring up the CFL first, second, and third down. We keep a statistic in our league, and it's CFL first and second down efficiency. And that simply is, a lot of times you have a good night offensively, you don't get to third down a lot. And so, on average, there's between 10 and 12, 13 third downs per game, maybe give or take. But some of your better nights offensively, you might be, 5 for 9 on third down and you were converting. And so the study is simply first and second down conversions of another first down.
Interesting. Yep. So there you have it, folks. What happened is we had another 10 minutes of Sean, but it got glitchy. He kept getting so that's the end of the interview. But it was a great show. And thanks for listening, and thanks a lot to Sean. And we'll be back next week with more glitches. No, we'll be back with a good show.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.